It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matter shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Lenny Aquinta for Community Matters, and my guest today is Prosecutor Assistant District Attorney Carly McNeil from Kenosha. Good morning, Carly.
Thanks.
We're going to be talking not only about you and your personal career, because you were recently honored for being a star in the office of the district attorney, but we're also going to talk about the profession and what it's like to be an assistant district attorney for Kenosha County. Let's start out by getting a little bit of your own background. I mentioned that you are from Kenosha County. Where did you start out in school here in Kenosha?
So I went to Bristol Grade School, so that's K through 8.
And then what?
And then I moved on to Central High School and graduated from there.
Did you develop an interest in the law at that young age, Carly?
Yeah, I was interested in law, and I kind of always had my eye on law school, even at that age in high school.
Wow, and it came true. Where did you apply to go to school that you ended up at?
So I ended up going to Union College. And at that time, I was most interested in going to a school where I could also play hockey. So obviously academics mattered a lot to me, but I also wanted to be able to continue playing ice hockey, and Union College was the best opportunity for me to do that.
Now that's in Schenectady, New York, and is not very well known here in Wisconsin, but you found out about it because of the hockey connection. Now that's a really fine school. It must have prepared you quite well. Where did you go on for law?
So then after I graduated from Union College, I ended up going to law school at Notre Dame.
Only the best. That's great. And did you take any particular specialization or make any decisions while you were in your course of study at Notre Dame that led you to being a prosecutor?
Yeah, so for law school, there's not a lot of special tracks. But what I did do is over my 2 summers in law school, I interned in criminal justice areas. So my first summer, I interned with my criminal justice professor. And then the summer after that, I interned with the Department of Justice in Chicago. And it was antitrust, but it was a criminal antitrust location.
Sounds fascinating. Now, I referenced at the introduction that you had received an award. It's called the Rising Star Award for 2019, and this is a statewide thing, isn't it?
Yes, so it's the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association issues statewide awards. So there was an award for the District Attorney of the Year, for the Assistant District Attorney of the Year, and then there's this Rising Star Award for a prosecutor who has about 5 to 10 years of experience.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
There was a very nice piece in the Kenosha News about you, too, just recently.
Yep, going on the press tour.
Now, the District Attorney, Mike Gravely, was very impressed with your work. He wrote a glowing letter about you earlier this year. And he says you get his highest praise and admiration. He calls you a gifted storyteller. What does he mean by that?
So for the role of a prosecutor, one of the things that we want to do when we present a case in front of a jury is we want to make sure that we present it in a compelling way. And, you know, one of the ways to phrase that is to tell a story. And that's particularly true when you have crimes that involve victims, because, you know, one of the most important things for victims can be telling their story, you know, telling the truth about what happened. That can be very empowering. And so our job is to help them do that. So one of the skills that we as prosecutors try to develop is our ability to tell that story to the jury, make it compelling, and try to bring justice to every case.
Well, we do the same thing. We try to tell stories here, too. Welcome to the trade. Now, in this glowing recommendation, he talks about your commitment to improve and to get results, and says that you're in the office by 7 in the morning and you never leave before 5 o'clock. Do you do anything else besides besides work? What do you do to have fun, Carly?
Well, yeah, I'm not super fun. So, you know, I have hobbies like everyone else. And, you know, one of the things that I like to do is I enjoy things like just, you know, simple things like reading and, you know, going on walks and stuff. I have my dog who I'm devoted to. So I try not to do too much that's very time consuming outside of work because work is my focus right now. But, you know, I still am able to get away, maybe more than Mike says.
The prosecutor, the district attorney said that you started in May of 2011 officially with the office. Tell me a little bit about how that went when you first became a member of Mr. Gravely's office here in Kenosha County.
So when I graduated from law school, it was the summer of 2010. And so having gone to school at Notre Dame, I had to take the bar exam. So that's what I was working on over the summer. And then once I was admitted to practice as an attorney, I started looking around for jobs. This being my hometown, I was definitely hoping to be able to stay in Kenosha County. So I just kind of showed up at the district attorney's office and was like, you know, hey, I want to gain experience. So I will work here. You know, I'm an attorney. Send me to court. I will work here for free. And it wasn't too long, you know, in the world of internships. It was from like November to May when a position opened up and I was able to be hired.
Oh, that's terrific. I imagine you've seen a lot of changes, or perhaps not so many changes, in the past decade now. Well, it's almost a decade you've been doing this work, either as an intern while you were at law school or an official prosecutor. Any observations of how things have changed from your perspective during this time?
Yeah, one of the things that makes the job interesting is that it's always changing. There's always, you know, the law is constantly evolving. You have to keep up on that, how the law is changing. You know, the kinds of cases that we get tends to change over time. You know, that's occurred. You know, people are talking a lot about the opioid crisis. So that's what we see as a prosecutor's office. When I first started, we didn't have a ton of, you know, heroin delivery cases or the dealing of heroin. And now that's like almost all that our drug unit does is try to prosecute that. One of the things we're trying to prevent is like something like methamphetamine getting into our community. So whenever we see cases like that, that's, you know, a highlight for us to know that that's a concern and, you know, what we can do to stop it. So, yeah, I mean, I would say the law is always changing. So it's not like one day is the same as another one.
But you have noticed a trend in the kinds of cases that are taking priority.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it follows national trends to some extent. But, you know, there's some issues that we can avoid and then some issues we're right in the middle of, like the opioid crisis.
Tell us a little bit about how this works in terms of the profession of being in the law. How many kinds of career paths would you suggest a person could consider if you were talking to an undergraduate who's interested in being pre-law or even a high school student here in Kenosha County? How would you describe the options open to a young person in this profession?
So I think there's a big divide between being a private attorney and then working in the public sector. There are a lot of public sector jobs available for attorneys. Those are the jobs where you're not necessarily going to get the big money. Many people find those jobs very fulfilling. And then there's private sector jobs, which definitely can be lucrative. And, you know, certainly people can find those jobs fulfilling, too. But, you know, those can be very competitive. So, you know, for someone who's thinking about being an attorney, you know, you want to make sure if you want one of those big law firm jobs, Chicago, New York, you know, even overseas, something exciting, you know, you want to make sure you set yourself up to be, you know, at the top of your class and making sure you show an interest in that because those are competitive jobs. You work very, very hard, but there's a lot of opportunity to advance, maybe become a partner and, you know, play a role in big cases like that. So I say there's kind of a divide.
Within the public sector, there are also different kinds. Now, there's the district attorney office role, and our guest, who is Prosecutor Carly McNeil has certainly been doing that. But Carly, there are other kinds of roles for attorneys in the public sector, too. Just about every state department has attorneys working for it in one way or another. Perhaps you could talk a little bit about that in terms of career paths that are also available within government at really the village, municipal, and state levels, right?
Right. So, you know, every government entity is going to have some kind of attorney to represent it. You know, we have corporation counsel here in Kenosha, and every county would have that. There are attorneys who work, obviously, at the state level, as you said, in every single department. You know, what I do in terms of prosecutors, well, there's people who work in the public defender's office. So they're just the other side of the coin for the work that I do. So I would say, you know, for any of those attorneys in those positions, again, you're not really in them because it's, you know, about making money or anything like that. It's about, you know, finding your niche. So for there are attorneys who maybe don't want to spend their time in court. They're maybe more interested in writing or researching. You know, judges have clerks, and sometimes those clerks are professional attorneys who help judges, and those clerks might never really be in a courtroom, you know, and be talking, you know, in front of a jury or anything like that. But there's a place for lawyers like that. So I would say for people who are interested in that, you don't have to see yourself as someone like on Law and Order to be a good attorney. Again, there are attorneys who are excellent in terms of research and writing, and that's what they do.
Well, that's terrific. That's very helpful in understanding what the options are for a young person looking ahead. You don't have to be the most accomplished public speaker. That's not a prerequisite to have a successful career in the law.
That's right.
Now, in your case, and in the state of Wisconsin, you're not a county employee, strictly speaking. You are a creature of the state of Wisconsin. Is that right? You want to tell us how that works? Who pays you?
Yeah, so prosecutors are actually state employees, which is kind of an interesting thing because the people who assist us, like our victim witness coordinators, our legal secretaries, they're county employees. So sometimes we have different holidays, which is interesting. We are paid through the state. And so the state determines like how many positions that each county has for prosecutors. And again, the same goes for the public defenders. They are a statewide entity. And so, you know, if it feels like Kenosha needs more prosecutors or public defenders, well, it's not Kenosha County that decides. It's the state that decides.
And by the state, you mean it's the Department of Justice, or does the legislature have to authorize additional positions? Do you know what that process is like?
Yeah, so that would be a legislative issue. So there would be some legislation that would pass, hopefully, that would give additional positions to various DA's offices across the state. And that is something that I think has always been under consideration for as long as I've worked in the DA's office.
Now, you talked about the pay in your line of work not being quite as lucrative as if I were working for one of the big three law firms in Chicago, say, or San Francisco. What is the starting pay for a prosecutor in the state of Wisconsin?
So it's going to be around $50,000 a year. It's broken up by hour, and I think I started at something like $23 an hour, although it might be slightly higher now. But we're not hourly employees. We're on salary. So someone who starts in a district attorney's office should expect to make around $50,000. And one of the things that we've fought for is pay increases, so that a prosecutor who has more experience gets more pay. You know, that makes sense, but that was something that was not in existence for a long time. So we have experienced prosecutors who don't make a ton more than that just because the pay raise system was not in place for a long time, although it has been reinstated in the last, I would say, 5 or so years.
I see. Does that affect the ability to retain great employees, in your opinion?
It really does. You know, some people love the work, and, you know, they just need a job that pays them more. You know, they have a family. You know, law school is expensive. You know, college too, so people might have tremendous debts. So, you know, they might love the work, they might be very talented, and they might have to leave.
They want to feed their family and send their kids to a good school too, right?
Buy a house. You know, it's tough saving up for those things if you have a lot of debt to pay off, and you're making $50,000 or $60,000. So it's for sure an issue to retain quality prosecutors. You know, you don't want to just keep training new people because you're missing out on years of experience by not, you know, paying people based upon their, you know, ability.
Mm-hmm. My guest this morning on Community Matters is Assistant District Attorney and Prosecutor Carly McNeil, who has come to our attention because she won the statewide 2019 Rising Star Award among district attorneys' offices all across the state of Wisconsin. Now, we were talking about pay just a minute ago. Is that $50,000 roughly starting salary, is that the same in, you know, Slippery Rock as it is in Milwaukee, or is there a difference? Is there any area for cost of living adjustment or no?
Yeah, there isn't. That's pretty much the same anywhere you start in Wisconsin.
Okay, I guess that's a downer because that has a lot to do with your cost of living and your expenses, doesn't it?
Right.
Now, one of the fascinating things in the letter of recommendation that the district attorney for the county of Kenosha, Mike Gravely, wrote about you is that you supervise interns and law clerks. Now, you've been with the office about a decade. Tell me about that and what that's like.
Yeah, so I actually also teach a class at Parkside, and so many of our interns are local college students. So we'll have Parkside students that either I know through my class, or Mike Gravely also has a couple classes at Parkside. And when they express an interest in what we do in the criminal justice system, you know, we invite them to join us as interns. And we've also had a number of Carthage College interns as well. So that's our undergraduate interns, and they're able to see court, you know, for people who are interested and maybe doing this work. Nothing better than seeing court and seeing what the work actually is, particularly for people making that decision about going to law school. And then we will often have a law student intern, and the laws in the state of Wisconsin allow someone who is a law student after their second year of law school to actually appear on the record in court. So they're not an attorney, but they are supervised by one of us, one of the assistant district attorneys, and under our supervision, they can actually appear in court. So that's another great learning experience for someone who wants to become a prosecutor.
Well, those are terrific opportunities. And what is your role in working with them? You mentor them, you crack the whip. what is it that you do?
Well, our interns are very motivated. So what I have to do is pretty much guide them in the right direction. And that can be, you know, hey, here's an interesting trial that's happening. Go to this courtroom, watch this trial. Or, you know, sometimes we have projects for interns. You know, obviously it's fitting to their level, but if there's a project, we assign them to the project and make sure they understand, and then you know, they accomplish the project. And then for our legal interns, what I try to do is give them a diversity of experiences. So we try to have our legal interns, you know, do everything from initial appearances to sentencings. Ideally, if we can get a trial for one of our legal interns, don't think it was last summer, but a couple of summers ago, I did do a trial with a legal intern. So again, not a lawyer, but she already has a trial under her belt. So what with the legal interns in particular, I want them to see all aspects of what we do at the DA's office, so they can make a very informed decision about whether that's what they want to do.
That's terrific. Can you talk a little bit about gender issues in your line of work? I'm unfortunately old enough to remember when there were virtually no women in law school, and the admission of women to law school was still considered novel when I was an undergraduate. That's happily is not the case today. What's your feeling about the status of women within the legal profession these days?
Yeah, I think it's changed dramatically. It's funny, each of the places I went to school didn't admit women in the 70s. So, you know, if I had grown up in that area, I couldn't have gone to school where I went. So the legal profession has also changed. You know, we have more women working in our office than men. You know, among the judges, we have two female judges who are outstanding. And so, you know, I think the legal profession is much more open than it has been in the past to women working. And, you know, I certainly myself, you know, I've experienced, you know, nothing but complete welcome. So I think that's a great change from, you know, perhaps what things were in the past.
What advice do you have for young people who are interested in going into this profession, particularly women, but men as well? What would you tell them? What would you tell, say, a high school junior, and what would you tell a college sophomore?
Yeah, so for a high school student in particular, you know, they don't have to be making decisions. So I think for a high school student, it's, you know, you go to college and you see where that takes you. You know, maybe you take some criminal justice classes or pre-law type classes. And if, you know, that's something you excel in and something that you're interested in, great. You can continue to pursue that path and keep your options open. Then for someone who's already in college, what I would suggest is making sure that you can complete your education and try to have the least amount of debt possible. You know, again, I do have a college class at Parkside. And so when students ask me in particular, you know, I've had students say, okay, I got into this law school and that law school, but I can, you know, I can go to this one. Maybe it's not as prestigious, but it's going to cost less. And, you know, I tell them, you know, hey, it's all about being able to graduate and keep your options open. You don't want to have to take a job, have to take a job that you don't necessarily like just because you have, you know, a tremendous amount of debt. You know, I feel very fortunate that I was able to take this job, you know, that I love, that is great for me. And I wasn't forced and haven't been forced to do something different because of debt or something like that. So, you know, that's something, you know, it's not a fun thing to hear, but in terms of practical, you know, what you should be looking for and looking out for yourself, I think that's a huge factor.
Thank you. That's very, very helpful, I'm sure, to many people who are listening. Now, one of the other things that Mr. Gravely says about our guest, Carly McNeil, today is that you do all of the external community relations coordination for the staff of the district attorney's office, making certain that they are out in the community in a positive way. That sounds great. Why don't you operationalize that for us? What does that mean?
So there's a few things that we're trying to do. You know, one kind of I think fun project that we're doing is many people in our office, and that includes our legal secretaries or victim witness, we're working as mentors in a local grade school. So, you know, that's because Mike Gravely found out about that program and thought it would be, you know, kind of a great way for us to spend our lunch hour and sort of give back to kids in our community. So, you know, that's not anything that anyone say is directly related to the role of the district attorney's office, but, you know, hey, we're a part of the community.
What have you learned from doing that?
I've learned a lot about the kind of food that my kid likes. It's been kind of eye-opening to see, you know, how these kids are in school and kind of how they are selected to have a mentor. You know, it can be their teacher or a parent who thinks, you know, this kid needs a little extra help, or this kid could use an adult just to sit down and spend some time with. So it's been interesting to see, you know, which children, you know, have been put up for that, and there's a need for more mentors.
I have a suspicion that it's changed you too a little bit, Carly. How might it have changed you doing that work?
Yeah, you know, as you grow up, you can kind of lose touch with the childhood years. And so that's been kind of great to go back and also learn, you know, what kids today are up to and what they're doing. And, you know, just try to give them, you know, the guidance, you know, let's read a book, or, you know, let's do something, you know, stay off these cell phones. Let's, you know, let's do something educational that's fun. Let's play a game. You know, let's, you know, engage, you know, face to face, which is something that I think maybe kids don't get enough of these days.
What a great role model you are for our young people. That's terrific. You also are a liaison, Mike says, to the groups in the community that are interested in social justice, including things like prison reentry and scientific review of shootings in the city of Kenosha. Why don't you talk with us a little bit about the social justice interests of your office? I I know that in the public perception, we don't normally think of the district attorney's office in the warm, fuzzy way, but this shows to me a great deal of sophistication and understanding of the role that law plays in our society. And I'd like to hear you how you feel about it. I know that this is a very important thing to the district attorney, and obviously to you.
Yeah, so Mike Gravely is really the leader in this. And, you know, it's important for people, I think, to understand that, you know, there's no tougher prosecutor than Mike Gravely. But he also understands that what we try to do in the district attorney's office, you know, if you think in the end your goal is I want convictions, that's what I want. You know, that's not really our goal. You know, our goal is to address, you know, crimes and hopefully prevent crimes in the future. So, you know, one of the things Mike, with his experience, has been able to do is, you know, have in mind sort of the big picture goal. And, you know, one of the things we want to do is we want to make sure that crimes don't happen again, which means supporting efforts when someone is released from prison. You know, we want to make sure that person has every opportunity to succeed and to not commit a crime in the future. You know, that's particularly true for violent crimes. You know, when someone is released for a violent crime, you know, they have served their sentence. So what happens next? And what we hope is what happens next is that person gets a job, that person supports their children, that person reintegrates themselves into their family who has been without them, you know, perhaps for years, and that person, you know, becomes a contributor. You know, we want that person to not be in the criminal justice system again. And we have certainly seen success stories when people, the person who is released from prison, when the person is committed, and when, you know, the pathway is sort of cleared for them. And so that's something Mike cares about a lot, and we work with Racine/Kenosha Vocational Ministries, Jim Schatzman, who has helped us a lot in terms of identifying people who need the most attention, and then guiding those people, again, in the direction of towards a lawful contributor to society. And that's also something we're trying to do in terms of hopefully establishing some mentoring for individuals who are released from prison. We have looked at programs that are successful. There's a program in Las Vegas that's successful. There's a program that's being operated out of Milwaukee. And so that's a part of reentry too. You know, particularly if the person being released can meet with someone who has walked that path before. You know, someone who says, I was released from prison 10 years ago. Here's how I didn't go back. Because, you know, you can have ideas about, hey, I never want to come back again. But if you don't actually have a plan, you might just fall back into your old ways. And so, you know, saying that Mike is focused on social justice, I think it's completely connected to what we try to do at the DA's office, because we don't want crime. You know, we kind of know we're always going to have it, but we aren't really doing our jobs if we're only trying to convict people and not trying to rehabilitate and allow people to move past, you know, bad decisions and, you know, become productive members of society.
We use that term social justice, but perhaps maybe as a writer, I like to think that what we're really talking about is justice broadly and deeply understood. Does that make any sense from your perspective?
Right. I think, again, someone with Mike Gravely's experience sees that, that it's, you know, to do justice is, you know, not only to get a conviction, but to actually, you know, accomplish the goals. So, and rehabilitation is a big goal. Another thing that, you know, Mike Gravely has cared a lot about is providing diversions to criminal prosecution for first-time drug offenders. You know, if we can help someone who has an addiction problem overcome that addiction without prosecuting that person, without getting a conviction, good. We have accomplished what we want to accomplish without bringing a criminal prosecution. So again, it's just part of the big picture goal, you know, of justice.
In our recent campaigns for sheriff, one of the topics that was discussed was education, training, and rehabilitation type programs within the confines of whatever kind of detention has been prescribed by the by the court. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, what your perception is about that? Are we devoting enough attention and money to education and training within the walls of prison? We often hear about some wonderful isolated programs, mm-hmm. which I celebrate with those who run them. Are they broad and deep enough?
Yeah, so I think for our county, you know, our concern is about the county jail. You know, the prison system is a statewide system. But for us, Mike Gravely and I actually work with a couple people from the county jail who are focused on helping those who are being released. You know, a person can sit in the jail for quite a long time. It's not prison. It's different from prison, but that person is still being released. And so what will that person do? Will that person, again, go back to the old ways and commit crimes, or will that person be rehabilitated? So I think we can do more in local jails in general in terms of caring about rehabilitation, because many people don't see prison, but that doesn't mean there aren't issues. So one of the things our jail is doing is the Vivitrol program. So that helps in terms of the opioid addiction.
Now, you said it's Vivitrol. Let's stop a minute. What is that?
So Vivitrol is a drug that is not itself addictive. And what it does is block receptors in the brain that respond to opiates. So the idea is someone who takes an opiate, having taken Vivitrol, does not get high. And so it helps with cravings for people who are being released from jail. And, you know, anyone who works in the criminal justice system knows after someone's released from jail is a very dangerous time in terms of potential overdose. So what we're trying to do is help individuals who are released from jail. Hey, maybe you can stay drug-free in the jail, but what happens when you're back out in the community and, you know, passing the person who sells you the drugs, or, you know, in the location that causes you stress and makes you turn to the drugs. So programs like that are operated through the jail. Another great program that our jail has is the Living Free program. You know, those programs that are focused on rehabilitation are so important because, again, not everyone goes to prison, but that doesn't mean that person doesn't have problems and, you know, treatable issues that we can hopefully address as a community.
The Living Free program, what does that moniker represent?
So it's a longstanding program in the jail. I think it's very supported, you know, by our office, by, you know, the judges, in terms of having a rehabilitation component for people who are serving a jail sentence. And it includes things like domestic violence classes. You know, it includes drug addiction problems. And, you know, it's a productive way for people to spend their time in a jail, you know, going through the program and learning how to deal with the particular issues they are having in their lives that cause them to end up where they are.
I imagine you need community partners from time to time to help you with these programs, both while people are incarcerated and after their release. What kind of help and partnerships do you seek and are you maintaining and looking for still?
Yeah, so we work with partners like the Hope Council for Alcohol and Drug Abuse, with PSG. We work with Women's and Children's Horizons a lot for the domestic abuse issues. We certainly work with things like our local health department and the Department of Workforce Development has actually been working with us in terms of locating jobs or helping, you know, people who are released find jobs. So we actually have been working with a good number of community partners in terms of trying to address these issues and make sure people, again, who are being released have the support to make the correct decisions. And that can include things as basic as, you know, I owe child support, what do I do? What we can do and what we have been doing through the district attorney's office is, you know, connecting people so there's a face, you know, an actual person in the community who can help them with that issue. You know, child support isn't scary. It isn't something that's going to get you in trouble. It's something that you should do. Here's who you talk to.
Now, the news is often reporting barriers for people, barriers to successful reentry. I wonder, from your perspective, what barriers are remaining that we just talk about Kenosha County or Racine County. What barriers would you like to see us attack, or where is the additional effort from your perspective needed? Unless you think everything is perfect.
Oh, of course not. So one of the biggest barriers I do hear about is employment. And so, you know, we've been going through a great period where the unemployment rate has been very low. So employers are looking for people. So one of the initiatives that Mike Gravely had us involved with last fall was an employment expo. And so that wasn't a job fair. What we did was we were working with community partners and directly meeting with employers, because we want employers to be less afraid of hiring people who have a criminal background. You know, that can be a scary proposition. But yet, you know, one of the best ways for a person to stay out of prison is to have a good job. That's a huge motivator and, you know, hugely important for, you know, people's families. So what we did was we connected employers with the services in the community. Again, things like the Hope Council. So we can tell employers, hey, you know, maybe someone who's released from prison isn't such a risk because there are all these support systems in place, like Racine Vocational Ministries, you know.
A very good organization.
Right. So, you know, if Racine Vocational Ministries, if you know the people who work there as an employer and they tell you this is a good risk, hire this man who is released from prison or this woman, you know, that again puts a face to a problem, and then it can help build trust in terms of, you know, hiring people who have those challenges. So that's, I would say that's one of the biggest barriers and something that, you know, we are directly trying to address in an economy where employers are looking for people.
What about the law with respect to, I confess I just don't know currently what the law is in our state with respect to having to report arrests, criminal convictions on an employment application, because I've spoken to many employers who have said in the past, who've said that's automatically, we're not interested, we don't care about anything else. Once we see that, it's all over.
So actually, if you go on the online records, so the Wisconsin Circuit Court records, there's a particular warning, you know, criminal convictions aren't to be used against people in terms of employment. Well, you know, that's not necessarily how it works in practice. You know, employers are generally allowed to ask the question. And so why does someone not get an interview? Well, it could be a dozen things, or it could be that felony conviction.
So it's still on, you may still ask that question on your application form or in a personal interview.
Yeah,
in our state.
That is my understanding, that employers still are able to ask that question. And again, it can be relevant. You know, if there's a daycare, hey, you know, you got to see people's criminals history. So I'm not saying that it's not relevant, but it's something that we hope that people can overcome once they have shown the ability to, again, not reoffend and to be, you know, reliable employees.
I hate to pop this question on you, but I will. What's your personal, I'm not asking you to speak for the office, but for your, what is Carly's personal feeling about legislation prohibiting asking in the initial phase about criminal convictions?
Yeah, I would say for myself personally, I think an employer should be able to ask, and really, honestly, even if they aren't allowed to ask, they can just check Wisconsin Circuit Court access. We have a very robust, you know, public record system. So if you told an employer they weren't allowed to ask, well, they're going to be able to find out anyway.
So it's kind of an irrelevant question, and as long as you have such a
if
public
you have,
system.
All you need is someone's name to look them up. So I think, you know, a more practical solution is trying to, you know, connect employers to people who, you know, would be able to fit into their workplace even if they have a criminal history, and hoping, you know, that employers don't see that as an automatic bar. And again, if an employer has relationships with agencies like, you know, Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministries or, you know, the Hope Council or, you know, anything like that, if employers develop those relationships, you know, then they can rely on people who, you know, will essentially vouch for the person with the criminal record. And then, you know, everyone can feel better about, you know, that experience and being able to hire someone. So, you know, not asking the question, I don't know that that even works in Wisconsin.
And I imagine you can also do some outreach through organizations like CABA and the Chamber of Commerce in terms of educating employers about the issues and what the solutions are and the community and social benefits and the benefits to their own firm in terms of possibly getting employees who are exceptionally grateful and going to be reliable and loyal.
Right. So, you know, not wanting to leave at the first opportunity. And that's exactly who we worked for, you know, our employment expo. We work with CABA closely because our goal was to connect employers with the resources in our community. Know this is out there. You're looking for employees. We have people who we think would be good employees and reliable who are struggling to find a job. You know, let's connect.
In the length of your tenure with the law in this kind of role, we've had in Wisconsin the implementation about a decade ago of truth in sentencing laws, mandatory minimums, and so forth. Well, you want to just give us a little fill-in as to what that means and how that is working out from your perspective?
So people, I think, most commonly use the word parole. But actually in Wisconsin, currently, under our current law, and this has been in effect, you know, I think since around 2000, since before I started working at the district attorney's office, what judges do now is they give someone, if they are giving someone a prison sentence, they divide up that prison sentence. So maybe a person is getting an 8-year prison sentence, but the judge will say you get 4 years of initial confinement and 4 years of extended supervision. And what that means is that the person needs to serve their 4 years in prison before they can be released onto the 4 years of extended supervision, which, again, we would commonly know as parole.
You don't get any extra time off for good behavior or whatever during those 4 years. It's 4 years, period. Is that it?
That's why it's called truth in sentencing. There are a couple of programs in the prison that do allow people to get less time. But in general, you know, again, if I'm talking to a victim or trying to explain a sentence, you know, generally I can tell someone if the judge says it's 4 years, it means 4 years in prison with a few limited exceptions.
Thank you. That's important for us to understand. Now, there's no real pressure to change those laws as far as I'm aware of. I think that's what we're going to have for the foreseeable future. Is that right?
I haven't heard of any initiatives to change that.
In the operation of your office, Carly, what's the caseload like? How many cases does a person juggle at once, and how do they get assigned? Is it's like a black box mystery to those of us on the outside.
Yeah, we have quite a few cases. I think probably the easiest way to think about it is the number divide in terms of misdemeanor cases filed and felony cases filed. So I would say we file maybe around 1,500 to 1,600 misdemeanors, and then maybe around 1,300 felonies. I haven't looked at the exact numbers from last year, but I think it's around that number. So that's, you know, an awful lot of cases, you know, approaching 3,000 cases, and that doesn't even include traffic cases. So any operating while intoxicated case until it becomes a fourth is not included in those numbers. So, you know, add all the operating intoxicated cases to that, and we have, you know, maybe around 3,000 cases that are primarily handled by about 10 or 11 prosecutors. So, you know, our deputy district attorney and our district attorney have a more specialized caseload, but, you know, the majority of the cases are going to be handled by the assistant district attorneys. And so that's a lot of cases per assistant district attorney.
And how do they get assigned? Who decides? Does district attorney Mike Gravely decide who gets what case? Is that how it works?
So for efficiency purposes, we try to do things as automated as possible. And so in Kenosha, I say we have 3.5 criminal judges, and people say you have half a judge. No. So we have 3 judges who spend their full time doing criminal court. Then we have another judge who spends every other week doing criminal court. So the way we assign cases depends on which judge it's in front of. So what we typically have is 3 prosecutors per judge, and we're just in there on a 3-week rotation. So if the case is set for our week, then we keep it as a case, and it continues to be set for our week. You know, it's really assigned based upon the judge it's assigned to and the court date that it gets. Because if it's not automated, it's really hard to keep track of assignments and be efficient.
Our guest this morning on Community Matters has been Assistant District Attorney Prosecutor Carly McNeil, who's been recognized as a 2019 Rising Star among the state's assistant district attorneys. Congratulations, Carly. It's been a pleasure meeting you and learning more about the criminal justice system and how it operates here in our corner of southeastern Wisconsin. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to